This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 22nd, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 161. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. It was supposed to be Grey Cup week in Regina, but the pandemic sacked the 2020 Canadian Football League season. Listen to highlights of how Canada's football tradition was celebrated virtually and my interview with Football Canada and TSN's Jim Mullen. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is communication a major weakness of the BC NDP government at a time when there is no margin for error? A pandemic emergency demands better communication and more transparency. Take what Premier John Horgan said on November 18th about children spreading coronavirus.
The evidence is fairly clear that children are not transmitters of COVID, and so adults working within the K-12 system are bringing the virus into the classrooms and or into the schools, and that's led to outbreaks in pockets of British Columbia, and we want to stamp that out.
South Korea's Center for Disease Control reported in October that household transmission of the virus was high if the index patient was 10 to 19 years of age. Horgan can be forgiven for not seeing that report. He was busy on an unnecessary election campaign and now has some catching up to do.
Dr. Henry and public health are overwhelmed, and I don't mean that in a way of can't keep pace.
Well, you're either overwhelmed or you're not. It means being snowed under or overloaded. Continuing questions about the BC government's lackadaisical communications response to the pandemic. The $30 million a year department has been 2 to 3 weeks behind all the trends ever since January.
I know that British Columbians want to help here. And if there are suggestions, if there are individuals that are listening to me today that believe that they can use their platform to amplify the message, we want to hear from you. So I'm on the internet. You can find me at HorganSupremier.com or something like that. I'm sure you can find it. I'm not sure what the address is, but we're always open to new suggestions and new ideas.
For the record, premier@gov.bc.ca is the email address. Horgan could be forgiven. His MLA office email address was offline after the legislature's website and email system were hacked. It took almost 10 days for officials to fess up.
When it comes to travel, non-essential travel is prohibited in British Columbia, and it will remain that way for the next 2 weeks at least.
Horgan spoke a day too soon. Dr. Bonnie Henry issued a new verbal order against social and recreational travel outside health regions on November 19th, but it will not be enforced, so is it really prohibited? Mayors of Surrey, Delta, White Rock, and other municipalities issued an open plea for more anonymized data about coronavirus cases and clusters in their communities so that they can plan the response accordingly. But Horgan continues to resist disclosure.
And my message to the mayors is the same as my message to the citizens in Fraser Health. You need to amend your behavior. You need to reduce your social gatherings. You need to focus on staying distant from people you don't know. And if you can't do so, you must wear a mask. You should wear a mask. I wear a mask when I'm engaging with people. You should do the same thing. We have been as transparent as any jurisdiction in North America on a daily basis for months, giving appropriate information to the public so they have an understanding of the risks of COVID-19 in British Columbia.
Finally, after resisting new scientific research in favor of widespread masking, Dr. Bonnie Henry bowed to pressure. The Solicitor General will order masks be worn under the Emergency Program Act. Here is how Henry's message changed over the months. March 20th.
I don't think it's necessary, and I will continue to say it's not necessary unless you're sick yourself, in which case a mask can keep those droplets in, and it's important if you do need to go out for urgent things like going to a medical appointment.
April 1st.
We need to be a little bit careful. You know, they're not a medical mask, but they can keep your droplets in when you're out and about with others. What is not proven is that they provide you any protection. And I think that's the really critical part.
November 12th.
You know, we've never mandated that you have to keep a physical distance, but we know people understand that. And the masking is the same concept. It's an additional measure, very important right now. It protects you, but more importantly, it shows that you're part of this and it protects others around you.
November 19th.
This will mean, technically, this will mean mandatory wearing of masks in all indoor public and retail spaces.
BC fared better than other places in North America back in the spring. It can no longer be smug. The second wave is here, and the long-term result will be regret for holding an election in fall 2020 instead of fall 2021, when it was required by law. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the South China Morning Post, Hong Kongers have used 2 billion disposable masks since February, environmental group says, urging government to promote reusable variants. Greeners Action surveyed almost 1,100 people and found that 92% of respondents habitually wore disposable masks. People may have misconceptions about the protection offered by reusable masks, environmental group's officer says. The top three considerations of those who wore disposable masks included the level of protection they offered, 81%, hygiene, 81%, and stock at home, 35%, according to the survey. In the Japan Times, Tokyo Olympics in the balance as COVID-19 surges around the world. Experts are doubtful that a vaccine will be available and distributed equitably to the Japanese public or to the myriad athletes, spectators, organizers, trainers, stakeholders, and media personnel that travel from countries that could still be dealing with the active outbreaks. During their stay in the Tokyo Olympic Village, athletes will be asked to arrive and leave as quickly as possible and discouraged from sightseeing or going out among the public. ABC News Australia. Mallacoota College investigated after totally unacceptable sex doll incident on Muck Up Day. Primary school students at the Prep 12 school saw the doll in the playground during the lunch break. Sources said the blow-up female doll had visible genitals and was tied to a pole during lunch break and had water and ice thrown on it. The sources said students and at least one teacher rode on top of the sex doll down a children's slide, and a female name was given to the doll. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, 19-year-old man linked to severed deer heads left outside Lake Oswego homes, officials say. Lake Oswego police have identified a 19-year-old man that investigators say left 2 severed deer heads near Biden-Harris campaign and Black Lives Matter signs. The 19-year-old, who grew up in Gladstone and attended high school in Lake Oswego, told investigators he had been deer hunting and was driving around with friends. Then he left the deer heads near the political campaign signs because he wasn't a fan of Biden, according to authorities. In the Seattle Times, West Seattle startup helps mask wearers let their smiles shine. Friendly Face in West Seattle was motivated to figure out how to create reusable, realistic masks using selfies and measurements taken with the camera depth sensors. We were frustrated by not being able to see people's faces in public spaces, the mask creators write. We wanted to bring levity, empathy, and safety to the new reality we live in. The masks, $29, and gaiters, $49, include a laundry bag, ear saver, cord locks, and 2 charcoal filters. That's from Friendly Face in West Seattle. In Czech news, snowbird visitors from across Canada pack Vancouver Island resorts as pandemic continues. Tourism Vancouver doesn't have a number of all the snowbirds visiting here from across Canada, but they say it could be in the tens of thousands. On Thursday, Dr. Bonnie Henry, the provincial health officer, urged people not to travel around the province unless it's for essential trips. She also said people should not be making non-essential trips in and out of British Columbia. However, there is no provincial health order limiting travel in place. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The 108th Grey Cup game was supposed to happen in Regina on November 22nd. The entire 2020 Canadian Football League season was cancelled because of the pandemic. Unlike the National Football League, the TV contract in Canada is no substitute for ticket revenue. The CFL has kept Grey Cup fever alive with the Grey Cup Unite virtual program. Commissioner Randy Ambrosi appeared on a web forum with BC Lions season ticket holders to talk about restarting in 2021.
In the days ahead, we're going to have our presidents in the six provinces that we play football. We're going to have them approach their chief medical officers, asking them for, for their insights in how they think the COVID crisis will play out and how it will intersect with the vaccine. What we really are going to try to understand is a timeline. So when do they think we should be able to start planning to get back on the field? And I believe there is reason to be optimistic that we can get all six chief medical officers, you know, aligned with a similar view of when we'll be able to open training camps and start playing. That's step number one. And once we have the beginning of that, let's call that the foundation of an idea of when we can start training camps, we're going to start building a very specific plan. Now, up to this point, we have had a tremendous number of scenarios we're looking at. But somebody said, I think with quite a bit of insight, you know, when you're planning for everything, you're planning for nothing. I believe in the days ahead, we're going to start making a very specific return to play plan. And that's going to allow us to sit down once we start. That'll allow us to sit down with all of our partners, including the Players Association, including TSN, to really make sure we're building a plan that is scalable, which is to say that we'll be able to play earlier if possible, and we'll move it back if necessary. We're also going to look at, in consultation with healthcare experts, to start planning for a certain percentage of our stadiums that they think we will be able to safely fill with fans. That'll be the baseline for our model. And again, it's going to give us a chance to really get to work on a specific strategy for returning to play.
The BC Lions are in a state of flux. Longtime owner David Braley died earlier this fall. The next owner is not yet known. President Rick LaLachure talked about how the team has kept the office open in 2020 and its plans for 2021.
We're very appreciative of our season seat base who, by far in the majority, have said to us, move our deposits or our payments to the 2021 season. We've also, I think, George Chaika and his business group have been able to really work with our partners. We have some very, very committed partners who have supported us through these times. And as I said earlier, have helped us with digital and our community relations with the schools in particular, which allowed us to do our programs. And of course, we've utilized the government subsidy program like so many businesses. And it's a combination that we've worked at, and as we've of course had to control our costs somewhat, but overall I think the whole team has pulled together to make sure that we're still in business going forward. And by far it was also with the commitment from David Braley that we're going to get through this and we're going to play again.
Meanwhile, members of the 2011 Grey Cup winning BC Lions gathered for an online reunion. G. Roy Simon and Travis Lule reminisced about playing and beating the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at home on November 27, 2011, after BC Place underwent a $500 million renovation. Here's G. Roy Simon.
It was a great feeling. I mean, the noise was, it was deafening. It was like you couldn't hear anything. It was so loud. But it was one of the best atmospheres you could ever be in.
The whole, like, there was, like Giro said, there was such an expectation for us, too. We were playing so well late in the year, and it, like, just had lined up that everybody was ready to celebrate, like, before the game started. Well, it felt like a formality almost. We just had to go out there and win the game so we could, you know, seal the deal and finish it off.
I know for me, I talk about it often, you know, starting 1-6 and being basically being an afterthought to come back and win. And then to win at home was something that, you know, it was one of the best moments in my career.
Members of the 2000 BC Lions held a 20-year reunion and reminisced about the swan song for Louis Pisaglia, who kicked the Grey Cup winning points over Montreal in Calgary on November 26th, 2000.
20 years, and if you look at
there the crowd,
it was a great night to celebrate a Grey Cup with some great guys. I mean, look at the background there with the lights and crisp late November weather, and with guys you're going to wish winning a championship with. These are the guys. What a great way to wish for me.
I'll never forget this.
Thank you, boys.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys, man.
There it is.
Great way to cap off Louis' career too, because that was a big part of our motivation. I thought, you know, realizing.
No, absolutely.
Joining us from Bowen Island, BC, is Jim Mullen, president of Football Canada and producer and host of Crown Gridiron Nation on TSN.
You know, we're following along with what the CFL is doing in terms of trying to create virtual events around Grey Cup Week. One of the things that was great to see coming out of Toronto on Monday was that the Toronto Argonauts revived the old boat logo, which, judging by the response to it, was long, long overdue. It was nice to see the Players Association do their normal access to the media. Randy Ambrosi was there with his access point to the fans, with his fan state of the league. And I know that TSN is going to be doing some special things on Saturday through the weekend. You know, it's great that we've got Canadians playing in the NCAA because we'll be able to focus on those in actual football on Saturday with no U Sports football and no CFL on this side of the line. And, of course, National Football League is there as well. I think in BC we're all fans of Chase Claypool. You know, football, whether it's three downs, four downs, big field, small field, arena league, it's still football. It's a great game. I think one of the things that we'll all be missing, though, is the cultural element that draws us together for Grey Cup. It's the largest Canadian broadcast every year in this country. And the cultural element is something that certainly I'll be missing this time around.
Yeah, there's no Grey Cup parties, no Grey Cup parade, no Grey Cup news conference with the coaches. I guess the question this year is, are the social media teams having sex?
Well, I'm not sure if we even want to have the answer to that, especially during a pandemic, considering some of the advice that's been tossed out there with some of the lockdowns. So that's a question I'll just leave answered for wiser minds than mine. Well, I, all through the week, I've been checking in on some of the old games. A lot of them are available out there on YouTube. And certainly the CFL picking all decade teams and having that play down that they're having between the greatest Grey Cup teams of all time has certainly reignited memories. But I think I'll be settling in and probably watching a couple of NFL games simply because the CFL isn't there for me. I know Rod Peterson is operating a CFL Sim Grey Cup game using Maximum Football, Doug Flutie's Maximum Football, which, by the way, cheap plug, Football Canada and all of our provincial teams today, as we speak, are just being re-released on Doug Flutie's Maximum Football. So, yes, there is a Canadian football video game out there, and you may not be able to play with the CFL team, but you can play with a provincial team. So, thanks for leaving me some space to make a cheap plug. But yeah, I'll be watching the NFL, going out for a walk, feeling misty-eyed, probably having a couple of drinks, but not drinking out of a red plastic cup that I normally do at Grey Cup weekend.
Well, if there is one Grey Cup game that you've watched on YouTube this week, what is your recommendation? If someone's going to sit down 3 o'clock Pacific, 6 o'clock Eastern, traditional start time for a Grey Cup on, you know, this weekend of November, what game should they be seeking out that would be worth their time?
I would say based on production standards, lack of defense, total offense, heroic plays on both sides of the ball, it's the 1989 Grey Cup between the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. For people that and younger people that don't know what happened in the game, I won't throw out a spoiler alert, but it does come down to the last play of the game. So it's certainly that a game that is always in the mention of the top three games when it comes to historians for the top Grey Cup games. The 97 game comes to mind. 96 game, pardon me, comes to mind with the Toronto Argonauts and Edmonton Eskimos in the snow in Hamilton. Some people say that was the game that saved the CFL. CFL was kind of teetering on the brink at that point as well. And the 1958 game that was played here in Vancouver between the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Hamilton Tiger Cats. That's a game that's available on YouTube as well. That'd be Leo Lewis and Kenny Plain, coached by young Bud Grant. Bud Grant, of course, the first individual to be inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame and the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton. So those are the three games that I would recommend. They're all kind of from different eras, aren't they?
What is life like on Bowen Island in November 2020?
It's cold, gray, and wet, like everywhere on the South Coast these days. But it is fairly quiet, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I know that when the threat level due to COVID goes up, the local government usually tries to send out signals for people not to come to the island during that time. And it does seem fairly quiet here. And this island was slow to comply to wearing masks. There was some pushback from a number of individuals in this community. That does not seem to be the case anymore. When you go out, everybody's wearing their masks. And I think that's a positive development in the community. One of the people that are involved in business here, her father was the first COVID death in BC at the Lynn Valley Care Center. So, you're always one or two degrees of separation away from this virus. Just today, I found out that my counterpart in Mexico, the president of the Mexican Amateur Football Federation, passed away due to COVID. We're getting to the point now where we all have that sort of connection. So I think we're all aware that the virus is here, and we're all taking steps to be cautious around it.
That was Jim Mullen of Football Canada and TSN joining on Skype from Bowen Island, BC.
Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Canadian Football League team owners, coaches, players, fans, all of those who have to wait an extra year for the 108th Grey Cup. Thank you for keeping Three Down Football alive at a trying time. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 22nd, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on November 22nd in 1987, two Chicago TV stations were hijacked by a pirate dressed as Max Headroom?
Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. PATREON.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.